Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on
Community Radio.
Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctical.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here around our kitchen table at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in downtown Ames. We talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions.
Especially the opinion part.
Oh, we're good at that.
Yeah, we're so opinionated.
Oh, yes.
But we're right, right?
Well, of course.
We know what we're talking about here.
So, and stay with us. We'll have a fine hour of stuff. We're going to talk about the closing of the year today and kind of wrap up that amazing bit of winter weather we had over Christmas. I mean, the rest of the eastern part of the United States is still under, I think they called it a cyclone bomb. And yes, it was. It certainly was. I have never had so cold at my house for so long.
Yeah, a little too much excitement.
What a bunch of weather. Now that we survived Christmas just fine. But boy, oh boy, it's so nice to see the sun again. I have a Christmas Eve tale, and this is a true tale, having to do with the weather and Christmas Eve that we have just passed. On Christmas Eve, my husband and I decided not to go anywhere. Thank you. We just stayed in with everything blowing around
us. Safest thing to do.
Oh, my goodness. It was like 30-mile-an-hour winds and well below zero, and it was cold. And long about 7 o'clock in the evening of Christmas Eve.
Well, wait, you have to add in that you live down a long, slightly plowed country lane.
We were in the country, yes. Yeah. We are in the country, and we were, like, blown in. So long about 7 o'clock, we get a knock on the door. A winter visitor. Oh, my goodness.
Unexpected knock.
Unexpected. Opened the door, and there was this very cold young man standing there. Believe it or not, in nothing more than a windbreaker with no gloves and kind of a small hat on his head. Holding pizza, saying, "Did you order pizza, ma'am?" And I said, "No, I did not." Now, when this usually happens on our long country lane, I can say, I just betcha it's the next house down the road. They've got a big family. I'm sure they ordered the pizza. So he said, "Okay, thank you, goodbye." He leaves. About 5 minutes later, he's back. "Sorry, ma'am, I'm stuck in your driveway." Christmas Eve. 30-mile-an-hour wind, below zero, cold. So we brought him in, sat him by the fire for a while, and he turned from blue to more of a rosy shade of pink. And he had to call his pizza boss and everything. And we called our neighbors and said, "Your pizza is at our house. You can come and pick it up there." And
dig out the poor pizza
and
man.
And dig out. And so my husband and I stayed in. My husband gives this young man a coat, and I give him some mittens, because, my goodness, you can't go out in weather like this. So they actually had to go out and dig out his car a little bit. The neighbors show up with a multitude of heavenly hosts, a whole bunch of teenagers in the back of their pickup truck.
Oh, excellent.
And they tumbled out, got the pizza guy out, got their pizza. So we had a pizza guy bearing gifts on a cold winter Christmas Eve.
Well, and you know what? Good for him, but to depend on the kindness of Iowans, right?
Everything turned out well in the end. Well, what do you have for us today, Donna?
Okay. You know, everything you're reading, every periodical that you open is now a list of this, that, and the other from the year. So I'm going to do just one. It's not a long list. It's just one item. But this is my vote for the year's most unnecessary, useless kitchen item. Okay? And it is, ta-da, a Bev, B-E-V, by Black & Decker cocktail maker. Okay, so the idea is it's like a Keurig coffee machine, but it's for cocktails. Don't worry. I did not get one. I don't even know anybody. It's for the person who has everything except common sense, I guess. So this is from Wired magazine. It's called $250 for this thing.
Okay.
It is, it's quite the monstrosity on the countertop. It weighs 16 pounds before you put the liquor in it, right? And 15 inches tall with a 16 by 18 footprint. Now, my counter space is just, that's precious real estate. This is not anything you would want. The secret sauce of the Bev is that it uses K-cup-like capsules to deliver all the other ingredients in cocktails. Now, this doesn't really, do you want powdered lemon in your margarita or powdered lime? The margarita pot includes lime juice sweetener and some type of orange flavoring. Some type, okay? It's called, here's the review. The finished cocktails aren't the best. Not all the bottles fit in the system. And,
The liquor doesn't come in little capsules. It
shows a picture. So it's got six places for bottles. So, you know, like in the, there's a vodka place and a tequila place, and it says, setting up the Bev requires a bit of effort and exposes some of the device's limitations. A standard Grey Goose bottle is too tall to fit in the machine's vodka slot. While a Patron tequila, the mouth is too wide for the hose's rubber gasket to attach. So sure, you can use whatever spirits you'd like, as long as the bottles are the right size. So the Wired guy, sort of tongue in cheek, says, "Yeah, pour the Grey Goose into an empty pop off bottle."
Good.
So the Grey Goose is the top of the line, and the pop off is the cheapest. So here's the worst of it, though. The other big catch is that the Bev doesn't do any shaking or stirring. It dumps the ingredients at room temperature into a glass, after which you're on your own when it comes to chilling them and serving the drink.
It doesn't even put ice in it?
Nothing.
And I wouldn't give that bartender a tip at all.
No. So this is why it gets my vote for the most unnecessary and useless kitchen device. What will they think of next?
Well, Merry Christmas to all of you who got one of those. And shake and stir yourself.
You know what? And just take the unopened box back to wherever it was gotten. Get something more useful. Spend it on something more useful. Or just buy more liquor if you need it. Put in your year's supply or something.
Oh, very
this
good.
Is ridiculous. So
very good. Well, there are other new things to try in the kitchen.
Yeah, we did get some good kitchen Christmas presents.
Yeah, we did. For instance, I got a bottle of black walnut oil. Thank you, Donna. And it is made in, believe it or not, not many places deal with black walnuts. Black walnut oil,
it's a very Midwestern, you know, they're only really kind of grown in Iowa and Missouri.
Yeah, yeah.
And
in quantity, yes. Stockton, Missouri is where this is good. And this is toasted black walnut oil. Looking forward
yum.
To using it.
Yum,
looking
yum.
Forward to using it. And there was something called, I haven't tried this yet, but this sounds intriguing. Black, no, not black, banana vinegar.
I have tried it.
Aha, do tell.
Well, okay, first of all, it was, I purchased it through Rancho Gordo, which is the place where we order all the heirloom beans. And you have to guess because you have never seen it before except there. So they describe it. What it is actual fermented bananas, not the kind of bananas that you buy in the grocery store here, but somewhere, you know, there are thousands of varieties of bananas.
More plantain-ish.
Well, yeah, somewhere in the spectrum between the plantain, which is not sweet, and the banana. So it has, it definitely gets a little hint of banana flavor. Now, it is not extremely acidic. So the first thing I tried it on was just salad dressing, and it tasted okay, but it kind of got lost. So I'm thinking more of using it kind of as a condiment or something like that.
Banana vinegar. There you go. Good. And something else from Rancho Gordo.
Oh, yeah, they have these. Well, the standard one is that are familiar around here are scarlet runner beans. These beans are about an inch big, right? Lana grows them. They grow around here. But Rancho Gordo has several varieties of large beans.
And these are dried beans and lovely beans.
Yeah. So these were Corona beans, which is a very large white bean.
tasty.
Oh, yeah, they're really, really nice. What I tend to do is I'll cook the whole package up, you know, because beans take a little while to work with, and then I will put them in little baggies and freeze them because I like to use them for kind of a visual accent in other dishes. You know, I mean, I suppose you could eat the whole bag of beans, but for example, if you're making a pasta in brodo, which is pasta with broth, so you've got, say you have a nice chicken stock or something, you float a few pieces of pasta in, you throw a couple of these big beans on it, and then maybe chop some fresh herbs on top, and you have a very elegant, but not, it's certainly is satisfying, but it doesn't like just stuff you full kind of thing. Or also just, what did you do with the beans?
Oh, I was making a bean dish with beans and tomato sauce and kind of a chili. It was more of a stew, you know, as in warm winter. So I soaked up a bunch of Good Mother Stoddard beans, which is something I've been growing from a Seed Savers Exchange. It is a pole bean. It's just kind of a small, round, speckledy bean, and it always cooks up beautifully. But just putting a handful of those Corona big, flat, white things in it, it kind of made it pretty. And it has a really nice texture.
Yeah, they're delicious and they taste good, but they have this visual appeal that
Corona beans, and that's from a company called Rancho. I don't know where they're from.
Rancho Gordo. It's California, Northern California, and they have a lot of other interesting, mostly beans on their website. Things that you don't see anywhere else.
Yeah,
heirloom beans or like black chickpeas and things like that. Really, really interesting stuff.
Very good. And also, they're finding these little things in bottles, you know,
little foodie gifts.
You found something from Burlap and
our friends at Burlap and Barrel.
B&B,
Burlap and Barrel, okay. Which is a spice company. We've talked about them a lot because they have really good quality stuff that's all like fair traded from, you know, little organic farmers direct from the farmers all over the world. So they have something called and we've been eating their cloud forest cardamom, right? And now they have a cloud forest cardamom extract. This is my newest. Yahoo! I'll read from their website. It's, our richly fragrant cloud forest cardamom extract is a beautiful take on the traditional extract made with our cardamom seeds from Alta Verapaz, Guatemala. So it's a Guatemalan cardamom, and it's really nice. A beautiful golden color, this extract can be swapped one for one for vanilla extract. Of course, you'll get a different flavor, right? It's excellent in baked goods, drinks, puddings, coffee, and anywhere else you want a splash of tropical cardamom flavor. Add a botanical burst to your favorite martini or make a refreshing citrusy cocktail with or without alcohol. This extract is slow-crafted custom blend made in collaboration with Bitter Cube, who is a bitters maker. They expertly infuse our cardamom seeds and alcohol to make a deeply flavorful, versatile extract. Use it anywhere you'd use vanilla in an equal amount. Okay, I like it for mocktails or cocktails.
I smelled that I didn't taste. This is really, it's lovely stuff.
Like a simple thing. Like if you're feeling a little thirsty at the end of the day and you want to perk up your palate, you just, you know, pour out a plain club soda, couple of shakes of this in it, and a little lemon, squeeze a lemon in, and you've got this very exotic drink with basically no calories, no alcohol. Let's call it sin-free.
Oh, it sounds lovely.
It is.
And very adult. I mean, I suppose you could crack open a Mountain Dew at the end of the day, but it's just not the same.
Well, I suppose if you want it, you could put it in your Mountain Dew.
Oh, no. No, but still, that's a really good drink.
I put some in my morning coffee, even.
Ha!
I know. It's just fun. Fun in a bottle.
Good. That's what we do in the kitchen. It's nice to have fun. Tasting things, it's a real joy. I went a little crazy this year and kind of made way too many Christmas cookies. But I don't think there's...
What a fault you are.
A terrible thing to do.
But
what inspired me, eating my cookies. Donna keeps passing off information and some of these bottles to me, and I had things I put in my cookies. The cookies I made this year, ginger snaps, oatmeal cutout cookies. I made date almond refrigerator cookies. I made a nice recipe rice cookies from Iran, which are lovely.
Oh, and what was in the rice cookies?
The rice cookies is all rice flour, butter, and believe it or not, 5 egg yolks. And that recipe is on our Donna Lana Kitchen.
And you put some cardamom on top of those,
that,
didn't you?
That called also for cardamom. I used that fresh ground cardamom.
This was not the extract, but it was the grinding of the same cloud forest cardamom.
Right. Good. And the important part in those cookies are actually quite a bit, quarter cup of rose water.
It was absolutely charming. I have to say,
you know,
I loved it.
You think about Christmas. All our tastes seem to come like from Northern Europe, and I thought, well, what's something sort of mid-East based? It's kind of like, what would Jesus bake? You know, let's think about the Holy Land. You know, so this Iranian rice cookies, and that is on the Donna Lana Kitchen page. It's good. It's a good thing. And because rice cookies called for 5 egg yolks, I had egg whites left over, and I made some macaroons. I'm still kind of working on the macaroon recipe, but they're okay. Macaroons are good.
And I thought your macaroons were great.
I guess I'm not a real super fan of coconut, so I'm never quite sure. Is this okay? I don't know. And so I did those. I did another favorite. Is the mocha nut butterball, which is really, really good.
Oh, now, is that where you use the King Arthur coffee extract?
That is...
In the yes. Another product we've been fuddling around
right,
with.
The recipe calls for dried coffee powder, instant coffee powder. Mm-hmm, and I thought, well, let's be a little fancy here. There was a King Arthur espresso powder.
Yeah.
Oh, is that ever good?
I know, it's really,
because
really good.
It is cocoa, and you have to have a little coffee taste in there, and of course lots of butter, and that was really good, so I added that, and let's see, I did pfeffernusse this year, however, I didn't have enough molasses, so I kind of stretched my molasses with some maple syrup, and yes, everything about these pfeffernusse is fine and dandy, but they're not as snappy and as heavy, sweet tasting.
The texture a little, probably. Yeah.
It's okay. So my pfeffernusse were kind of blah this year, but we ate other things.
We ate them anyway. They were good.
Yes, that's good. Another thing that I used a fancy addition to.
Oh yes, this. If I had a favorite.
Okay, a new recipe.
This might be it.
Italian cornmeal cookies, a recipe taken from baking, from Food 52. And I've talked about Food 52 as a collection of recipes before. Baking, 60 sensational treats you can pull off in a snap. The recipe is called Italian cornmeal cookies. And it's good. It really does have cornmeal in them. 1 cup all-purpose flour, 1/2 cup of cornmeal, 1/2 cup sugar.
Fine cornmeal.
And we can get fine cornmeal here.
Oh, we get corn everywhere here. No problem.
1/2 cup sugar. 2/3 cup cold unsalted butter cut into small pieces. 2 egg yolks. And the zest of 1 lemon. And they end up being, they're just the kind of thing. The little round cutout cookies. And they're delicate. And mine kind of spread a bit more than I wanted. To this recipe, I added... Help me with the pronunciation.
Fiore di Sicilia, which is flowers of Sicily, and I think that's a King Arthur product, also, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, now that's a little bottle, little drops of things.
Yeah, it's, and you don't use very much of this. This is very intense stuff. Like, we're not talking a quarter teaspoon. We're talking a drop.
Yes,
a drop or two. It is a kind of a orange and vanilla flavoring, really. It goes well in these cookies. It just gives everything like a little floral lift, basically.
Yeah, I mean, there is lemon
lemon zest in here.
But I've used this Fiora di Cecilia in other things, and yes, you just need a tiny bit. And no, it's not lemon. No, it's not orange. But it's flowers.
It's orange and flowers. Okay, here's the sad thing about living in the Midwest. Okay, by the time the citrus has traveled here from wherever, whether it's California or Florida, the volatile oils in the skin, you know, have, let's say they have departed from the fruit, right? So anytime you're using lemon zest, you will get some flavor from it, but you will not get the kind of flavors that, like, if they're making it in Sicily or California or something like that. So a little boost from one of these citrus oils, it's a little kitchen trick. I mean, I keep in my fridge, I have a whole shelf where I have the Fiori di Cecilia, I have some orange oil, some lemon oil, I even have some grapefruit oil that I use to kind of kick the flavors up in these things.
Yeah. So, and have the courage to break those bottles open and use them, because sometimes you get them in for one recipe and they get back in the shelf and they're all dusty and awful, but they're great to play with. Oh, you gave me something, and I put it in my date almond cookies. It was almond.
Was it the bitter almond or was it the new almond? We had two different almond things.
No, is it
the little vial? Yeah. That's a German product, Oetker or something.
Right, I was trying to figure bitter out what almond. It was, and it was all German. I couldn't understand.
Yeah, but you can smell it and you can tell what it is.
I figured out the almond, but other than that, it had all kinds of information that I totally could not read.
And I don't even remember where I bought that online. Oedeker, I think, is a German company that has...
Anyway,
odd
that was
things.
Another thing to Bert. I had fun with my Christmas cookies this year. That was nice. Oh, also, I want to mention the oatmeal cutout cookies. Usually I do the usual white flour, roll them out and cut them on the roll-out cookies and decorate them and
well,
everything.
Well, they're beautiful from one thing.
They're fun, fool with, and they're lovely. But... this recipe for oatmeal cutout cookies. Now, this actually has oatmeal in it, as in actually quite a bit of rolled oats.
I found it actually made a much more interesting texture and a little bit kind of a more spunky cookie.
Yeah,
something substantial too. It was really nice.
Now you can't cut them as nicely because you may be.
You might hit a flake or
you're
something.
You're running up against a flake. So I didn't do any fancy decorating this year. But I put all those cookies on a towel and then just made a powdered sugar, milk and a little bit of butter frosting and drizzled it back and forth and back and forth over all the cookies at once. Boy, was that a lot easier than doing every cookie
individually. Right. Well, and then you've got the colored sugars on them. So they're quite festive.
You got to do something a little colorful.
Stars and trees and, Lana gets into this. I just make fudge, big slabs of fudge in different flavors. But Lana, she's into the details here, so.
Well, you have to have a variety of stuff on your plate. But actually, and those oatmeal cutout cookies, which are actually good any time of year, doesn't have to be for Christmas, I found that to be a fine recipe. Where did I get that? That is on the Donna Lana Kitchen recipe page. You can find that.
The oatmeal cutout?
KHOI.
Aren't we together?
You can go to khoifm.org, find our page there, and find our recipe page, and there it is. So... that's a good one. And, well, I guess we might as well take a little break and also mention you're listening to us on KHOY. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen, tasty radio for the heart of Iowa.
Thank you.
Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're going to take this opportunity here at the very end of the year to kind of think about our show here. And thanks to all the fine folks that we've had as guests this year on our radio show. We couldn't do it without you. We've had all sorts of good people on.
We did. Lana and I, we just zoomed and zoomed and zoomed.
Oh, well, isn't Zoom a nice
thing? It works. I think we used to have everyone come in the studio to make the, or we tried to anyway, because I find the phone connections are, it's not the right audio quality, right? But Zoom, oh my goodness.
We had a good time. We talked to all sorts of good people. So thanks to all of you. And this year.
Right. We launched the Donna Lana Kitchen podcast. So it's the same program you hear on the radio. We did it this way. So Practical Farmers of Iowa with us applied for a USDA grant to promote local foods. And I'll be darned, we got the grant.
Ha! So then we had to produce.
Yeah, well, we are producing already, but what we weren't, you know, then we had some nice, knowledgeable PFI staff to help us figure out, well, where do you put this podcast and how do you do it and how do you get it up and running? And so we did it. We started in March and we'll continue to do this. So you have the option of your radio, but the KHOI does, you can stream it anytime. You don't have to just listen to the time slots that we have.
True.
And we also have on the KHOI site our 8 years of archives. In case you remembered something that you needed to refresh your brain with, it's in there somewhere.
So thanks to all the fine people here at the KHOI Community Radio and PFI that help us get our sounds out there. And good. How do people find their podcast?
Oh, the podcast. So wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it's Apple or Spotify or all the places that you can do this sort of thing, you just type in Donna Lana, which is one word, DonnaLonna, Kitchen, and up will pop our podcast.
Enjoy.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, we've been looking back at some Christmas adventures we've had, but let's look ahead to the New Year's. We're going to visit the Donna Lana Kitchen archives and talk to a fine woman about champagne. We're going to celebrate the New Year with some bubbly.
Yeah, so this is a recording that we did a few years ago with my neighbor, Ann Kinzel. So she is my neighbor. She's a, we'll call her a drinking buddy. She's also a member of the KHOI Board of Directors, and what does she do? Local talk, I think, regularly, right? So you may hear a lot of Anne's voice on that show, but Anne grew up half in California and half in France, and she visited the Champagne region once with her grandfather.
Yeah, very good. Let's see what she has to say.
Welcome, Anne.
Hey, welcome. Nothing better than talking about some mousseur, some champagne, some bubbly, whatever we want to call it.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it was because, as we all know, champagne can be quite expensive. And so, for parties on New Year's, sometimes we don't get enough bubbly. So I was going to encourage other people to try other kinds of bubbly that are quite a bit less expensive. And we were going to talk about the differences and what some of them are with, say, cava or Prosecco. But first, let's start with Anne, and she's going to tell us about what method champenoise mean.
So champagne is sort of the top of the line of the bubbly drinks, and I think there's two reasons for that. One, it comes from a limited region of France called Champagne, about 90 miles north of Paris. And for a wine to be called Champagne, the grapes have to be grown there. So that limits your territory.
Is that called AOC?
Yes.
Let's see, what's that stand for?
Appellation Originale Contrôlée.
Means the name of the origin is controlled.
Yes, so it has to come from that region. And then the second reason that champagne is expensive is because it's very labor-intensive. Champagne has to be stored, and it has
in
to
the
be...
bottle.
In the bottle. It has to be babied. You put grape juice in the bottle, if you will, and you add sugars and yeast, and you have to store that and turn it on a schedule by hand.
So per bottle.
So don't be surprised if that bottle's pretty pricey. It represents all that good labor.
And you were explaining to me about why you turn it, how you turn it, and what happens with the yeast. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. Now, I'm no vintner, but I kind of grew up with this, and I've been down in some champagne caves and seen what happens. So they put the grape juice in the bottle, and they add some yeast and sugar, and then they go in, and they turn it. And each time it turns, it helps the yeast and
wait,
the sugar.
So the bottle is laid on its side, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
In these kind of A-frame sort of racks.
I've seen them. They're interesting looking.
Yes. And
ancient looking.
Very ancient looking. So it's down in these limestone caves, and it's all these racks. It's really impressive. And they turn them like a quarter turn. And as they do that, the sugar and the yeast rise to the top. And then when they get all the way up there, they have to take it out.
Oh, the top of the bottle. So they're laid kind of on their side, but with the top pointing up. So how do you get the yeast out of the bottle without losing the bubbles?
Well, there's two ways. What they do is they pop the temporary cork, okay? And at that point, sometimes in the cheaper wines, the less expensive champagnes, they actually kind of freeze the bottle. And then so they can just sort of plop out that yeast and sugar little mass. And the more expensive stuff, they actually pop the cork and it shoots out. I've not seen it done, but it sounds really cool.
Well, the shooting part we can imagine because that's what it does. So then they put in that big mushroom cork after they've taken the yeast out.
Yes. And then I think they let it rest a little bit longer.
And the wire and all the stuff that you have to take off of it is to keep it from
blowing up
before you want it to.
Or as the French say, that premature explosion of champagne.
Yeah. And what is the significance of the limestone caves? Temperature? Well,
probably temperature. It's very constant. And the region of Champagne is full of these limestone caves.
Naturally occurring.
Then. Absolutely.
Huh. So describe your experience of going there with your grandfather as a little girl.
Sure. My grandfather sold industrial things, and among them were like tracks for mini railroads.
Mm-hmm.
And he sold these little mini tracks to these champagne, what they call houses in France. And so one day we got invited for a tour, and we got to go down in these limestone caves. They were enormous. You actually rode a little train to get around.
Oh, and that's where they had the tracks.
Yes. And the bottles, saw guys turning bottles. They all had, you know, like little labels on them saying when this lot had to be turned. And It was really impressive, and it was huge. I think it was Domaine Chandon, and it was quite the operation.
Well, that's a fun thing for a little girl to do with her grandfather.
Even got to taste a little champagne.
Of course. My son's father is French, and when his brother came over, when our son was born, the first thing they did was, you know, of course, crack a bottle, and they put it on the baby's tongue.
Oh, it seems much nicer than a cigar. I like that. So we can see why champagne is well loved, well tended, and it should be expensive. Lots of care goes into it.
Right. So if you're like me and you love the bubblies, and you know, like every once in a while there'll be some champagne in my life, but most of the time, like for example, if you're having a party and you don't want to buy, you know, 15 bottles of champagne, we've been exploring in Ames a lot of other bubbly alternatives. And what are some of your favorites?
Well, I really like Prosecco from Italy.
Me too.
And I like the Cavas from Spain.
Mm-hmm. And these are both bubbly and white. And you can readily find them anywhere from $10 to $20 as opposed to at least $50 to $100 for champagne.
Hmm.
So this makes it at least reasonable party material.
Sure. I think some of the Spanish ones can even drop a little bit lower than that, depending on the euro. There's also a French, what we call crémant or mousseux.
Spell crémant.
C-R-E-M-A-N-T, which is how you can sell bubbly or sparkly wine in France where the grapes are not grown in Champagne.
Ah.
suspect that a lot of the French Caiman is probably sold in Europe and in France and not so much
exported
in the export markets. Uh-huh.
Well, we do know for sure that you can buy Cava and Prosecco all over town. Really, the Hy-Vees both have it. Wheatsfield has it. Cyclone Liquor has it. And there are multiple price ranges for it. And they're really quite yummy. They're not sweet.
No, I think that the Cava is maybe...
Now, the Cava is Spanish.
Yes. Is a little lighter, in a sense, than the Prosecco.
I think usually it's quite bubbly.
Yeah.
Sometimes the Prosecco, although it's bubbly, it seems to have smaller bubbles, maybe.
Yeah, I guess I'd say the Prosecco is a little calmer. You can be a little bit more careful popping that cork. You're probably not going to get a missile going through the kitchen.
Oh, but that's the fun of it sometimes. Everybody screams.
Yeah.
There's something very celebratory about opening a bottle of bubbly. Mm-hmm. And the fact that so many people do it this time of year and probably never again throughout the whole year, or maybe perhaps for a wedding. It is definitely a cause to celebrate. Celebrate,
well, you
celebrate.
Know, people do are now, I think, drinking more and more Proseccos in the summertime because it is light and kind of a fun summer drink. I'll drink a Prosecco anytime.
Yeah, I think we're seeing people drink more lightly bubbled wines mm-hmm. in the summer. So there's the Prosecco. There's also...
Which is Italian.
Which is Italian, yeah. There's also a wine from Portugal, which is very inexpensive, which is not really a bubbly, but it has just kind of a hint of bubbles called Vinho Verde, or green wine.
That's true. And also I've seen some from South America as well, some Vinho Verde. And also one thing that's become more and more popular are champagne or bubbly cocktails.
Yes.
Oh, wait, that with your eyebrows going up, it sounds like you speak from experience.
Sure. Yeah, I think that champagne lends itself to wonderful cocktails. I mean, if you think about it, it's sort of like a soda with taste. Huh?
Yeah, and I think the most famous one would be probably mimosas, which are, what is that with, is it orange juice? Is that what's a mimosa? Orange, yeah. Fresh orange juice and champagne or... bubbly of any kind works yeah. well with the Cava or Prosecco.
Well, I was just reading for this New Year's a whole in the magazine Food and Wine. They had a whole section on champagne cocktails or bubbly wine cocktails. I think if you're going to make a cocktail out of bubbly wine, don't go buy a $60 bottle of champagne.
No, it's kind of a waste.
But you can make some wonderful cocktails with other spirits or liquors that really bring out the taste of the champagne and maybe lighten up mm-hmm. the flavor profile of the cocktail a little
well,
bit.
Well, now let's see. We had one last night, and it was lemon juice, maraschino liquor, which is, it has a cherry in it, but maraschino liquor is, I think, from Croatia, and it's is cherry flavored, but not the kind of cherry that we're thinking about. It's a little sweet at all, and it's not red at all. It's actually clear. And then what else did we put in that?
There was some lemon juice.
Oh, and white Lillet, which is a French aperitif wine, and then the bubbly on top of it.
Yeah, it's it makes a delicious sort of lightly fruity. It's almost a bit warm, even though it's a cool drink. It had
it's
a
New
really
Year's
nice
Eve cocktail.
Yeah, it was
it's a
great.
Cocktail.
It's great.
And then it, champagne or any of the bubblies mix really well with almost any kind of fruit juice or champagne or bubbly with what's the black currant liqueur?
Cassis, creme de cassis,
creme de cassis, which is just slightly sweet. All kinds of possibilities there for fun mix 'em ups. Good ways to celebrate. And do try some of these other bubblies. They're
California. A lot of the French champagne houses bought land in California in the 70s and 80s and produced their own version of champagne there, or bubbly. They're typically sort of in between the French champagnes price-wise and the Spanish Cavas and mm-hmm. Italian Proseccos.
Mm-hmm. And there's even a good... I guess you can't call it a champagne, but it's a Gruet, which is from New Mexico.
Yes, I've had that. Yeah, I have to admit, I was a little skeptical at first. You know, I've been to New Mexico. It didn't look like champagne country to me at all. But the Gruyère is a really, really nice champagne. They have a rosé, I think. They have a dry one, and they have a semi-sweet.
They have a blanc de blanc, too. Yeah. Tell us what a blanc de blanc is.
Well, blanc de blanc means, in French, sort of white of whites. And it's a champagne that's made with only white grapes and only Chardonnay, generally. And oddly enough, you can make white champagne with red grapes.
And why isn't it pink then?
Well, I think it has to do with when they take out the skins.
Oh, so they don't use the skins.
Yes, and champagne is always a blended wine.
Mm-hmm.
So they're blending different grapes, the sugar, the yeast, and they're always trying to get what they call the perfect balance. The art of the vintner is the perfect balance in the champagne.
So depends on how sweet your sweet tooth is, I guess.
Well, everybody celebrates with a bubbly their own way, and it's nice that there's so many different tastes out there.
You're listening to KHOI Community Radio, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Welcome back. We were talking about the wrap-up of the old year, the looking forward to the new year. That music was called the Tuscan Suite, an original composition by mandolin player Brad Johnson, a member of the Barn Owl Band, the Tuscan Suite. Well, holiday sweets, and we talked about cookies, and sometimes holiday sweets, Donna, get to be a bit too much.
Yeah, for New Year's, besides, you know, having the beverages, it's maybe you want some savory things to nibble on. So a couple of suggestions here. The first one is actually from the New York Times cooking thing, and it's a Dory Greenspan recipe. She's always reliable. She calls it a ham and cheese quick bread. So it's made in a loaf. She says this is a kind of savory cake that you make once and then play around it with it for years to come. In this version, there are chopped roasted red peppers, small chunks of ham, some herbs, and three cheeses, mozzarella, parmesan, and fontina. So she says, well, the cheeses could be cheddar Gruyere and a Simisoft. So basically, it's not a sweet bread. It's a quick bread. So butter, flour, baking powder, sea salt, and then the flavorings. So she's got red pepper flakes. Oh, then two large eggs, one egg, milk, olive oil, a little bit of honey, only 2 tablespoons. Then you get into the cheeses and the savory things. So, you know, you might have another quick bread or even a quick cornbread that you want to add these things into that then you can slice and, you know, and serve as bite-sized pieces. That's always nice. Another thing that I like to make this time of year is it's called a gougère, G-O-U-G-E-R-E or something like that. It's basically a cream puff dough, which is eggs and flour and butter. And you can look that up in The Joy of Cooking. And then you add in some cheese, maybe Parmesan and Gruyere or something. So you end up with a little cheese puff and you bake them in like, oh, inch and a half size balls. Well, they do grow. So you try to put them on the pastry sheet, smaller.
You dollop them on a pastry.
Exactly.
You don't need a
right.
muffin tin.
And those need to be eaten or cooked fairly close to the time that you serve them. Now, the other little trick that I have done for New Year's Eve, which is kind of it sounds really weird, but it's delicious. You take a sliced baguette is what you serve this on, and you make this little sort of gooey, creamy sauce, and it is. Take some dark chocolate chips, and on a double boiler, you melt them, And then you stir in some black olive tapenade, which is the paste. You know, it's already completely ground up.
Olives and chocolate.
Olives and black olives and chocolate. And then garlic.
No.
Yeah, yeah. My minced, my garlic that has been really finely minced in olive oil. And you mix the three together. You know, you're melting the chocolate. And then you stir in the at room temperature out of the jar, the black olive tapenade. And then some garlic. And a decent amount, you know. So you end up with this chocolate garlic olive stuff that is really good. And you just spread a little on the thinly sliced baguette piece. And then if you want some color, you can top it with either some, you know, roasted pequeño. What are those peppers? Paquito? The little not hot peppers, or some chopped red peppers or something like that. You just want to put a little vegetal thing on top, garnish, and some color on it. But, I got to say, people love this garlic chocolate black olive combination because it's a kind of a surprise.
Yes, it looks like, I bet on the table, that if you had it in a little container, I bet people would think you sprung for some caviar.
I don't know. I've never served it that way. I always just put it in the baguette pieces because it's finger food.
Okay,
yeah, and it tastes really good. So those are some little savory things that are nice for little New Year's Eve gatherings.
Oh, that sounds good. And see,
it's easy to make.
It doesn't have to be sweet.
No.
It just can be a little niblet. Oh, very good. Very good. Great. Well, I've been thinking about coldness and weather outside. I think we actually have some sunshine today, so the winter is sort of giving us a little break for the next couple days. But I've been doing my best to keep my bird feeder filled because you want to help those little guys along. My goodness.
Yeah, and since you're not out that much, looking out the window at everything else out there, it is pretty out there,
Yes.
Really
and
beautiful.
And yes, the birds do appreciate. I also noticed that my cat is no longer sitting under the bird feeder outside looking up. My cat is also watching
through
from
the window.
Yeah, right. This is fine. I'll just watch from here. Thank you. Well, he's getting a little farther along in his age, and so he's a little smarter. No sense.
Well, I had some dried out baguettes and stuff, and I kind of pitched them out into the backyard for the wildlife. And then I saw through the window a very big blue jay with a big piece of bread in its mouth.
they kind of take things over.
They came and took it. They were grateful.
You wonder how those little birds make it through the winter. The juncos and the chickadees. I mean, they're no more than a little ball of fluff. I noticed before this big winter blast, I was feeding the birds in the bird feeder, and on a winter day, it was cold out, but it was before we got this awful wind. I saw a little chickadee sitting just right outside the window in my redbud tree. And it's only just a tiny little round circle of a bird, and the sun was out. This bird was facing the sun. It had its chest puffed up, looking like, I swear it had its head back, just soaking up the sun. And it had its little wings up, just soaking up the sun. And I reckon,
sunbathing, right?
Chickens will do that. I mean, after days and days of no sun, my chickens are, oh boy, there it is. They'll raise their wings and put the old chest out. Yeah, they're looking to me to be nice and warm. So good luck. Oh, also, you know my dog will eat anything. He likes bird seed, too.
Farley, he's incorrigible.
If the birds knock some stuff off, he's out there, like, sucking it up. I also have to say that this was a good year for Farley the dog as far as Christmas is concerned, because while I was bringing in ingredients to make Christmas cookies out of the car, the dog helped himself. Farley the dog, for this Christmas, ate half a pound of butter. Very good.
Did it stay down or did it come up?
No, unfortunately, it did not stay down, but he did seem...
He's famous for his regurgitation.
He did seem very, very proud of himself. Oh. So, yeah, it didn't stay down. But actually, it's probably good it didn't stay down. That's a little bit too much butter for a small dog. Yes, it is. So think of all those birdies.
Farley is a corgi.
Yes. And you can't tell corgis anything. You know, don't try to reason with them at all. Goodness. Well, just thinking about Christmas and the 12 days of Christmas, huh?
Oh, yeah, we're in the middle of the 12 days now.
We are. I hate to see Christmas go, so let's celebrate the 12 days of Christmas. I copied something off of out of the paper. This has to do with the rising prices. And this shows how much the 12 days of Christmas, you know, the partridge and the pear tree and all those guys, it's going to cost us a lot more this year. For instance, partridge in a pear tree, the cost of partridge in a pear tree has gone up, a partridge, I suppose. I don't know if it's a pear tree, too. But has gone up from $223 to $280, I suppose it's the partridge.
Inflation.
Yes, it is. It is. Turtle doves used to be $450. Now it's $600 for turtle. It's a bit much. Yes, it is. And if you're thinking of hiring your lords a-leaping, your pipers, and your ladies dancing. Let's see, ladies dancing. I don't know what they based this on. I suppose if you're going to...
What are you hiring, the New York City Ballet or something?
If you're hiring the ballet, it will cost you $8,308 for your eight ladies dancing. I don't know how much of a show they put on for that. I don't.
It's only gone up 10%.
Oh, it's only gone up 10%. It was
pricey.
But
the lords are leaping. Okay, now is that because the ladies dancing get paid less than the lords are leaping?
I wondered about that.
This might be gender discrimination.
Now there is
here.
One more lord of leaping, but they get $13,980 for all those lords of leaping. And leaping doesn't sound as complicated as dancing.
Doesn't take as much training, probably. Anyway. And they have also gone up 24%.
Oh, we will muddle through somehow. So enjoy your 12 days of Christmas. Yes. So thanks for joining us today.
And thanks for lending us your ears all year long.
Yes, very good.
We hope we've made it worth your while.
Yeah.
At least you can get a giggle out of us. And sometimes some relevant information.
It just might be.
Yeah, there we're here to encourage you to eat good food and enjoy life.
We do. So, you've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Have a good, happy new year.
Happy new year.
Good. My name's Lana Noctical.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Good engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.